Ward substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, and Chuck Wolbers, a transition and work experience teacher in the special education department at Tremper High School, also in Kenosha. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Good morning and welcome to Education Matters. My name is Mike Keough. I'm one of the rotating producer hosts here. Today we're going to be doing a program dealing with the dual language program at the Kenosha Unified School District from a different standpoint. There won't be any administrators here or teachers here. We'll be talking to students and parents. And it's going to be kind of a collaborated thing rather than a host asking questions and so on. I'll ask a question to start. The first question would be, would you like to each introduce yourselves, since we're on radio and people can't see your faces with your name underneath it? Jessica, why don't you start with you?
Hi, I'm Jessica Zapp, and I'm a sophomore at Lakeview Technology Academy.
I'm Courtney Zapp, and right now I am a freshman here at Carthage College in Kenosha. I went to Indian Trail High School and Bullen Middle School.
I'm Omero Santos, and I am a freshman at UW-Milwaukee.
And the two of you, Courtney and Homer, you are both graduates of the dual language program, and Jessica, you're involved right in the middle of it right now.
Mm-hmm. Me and Homer are actually from the same graduating class from the dual language program.
Yep.
Okay, and now we'll keep going.
Michelle Amundson, and I am a parent of three former dual language students, two in college and one at Tremper High School.
And I said we were going to do this in a collaborative sort of way. We've been talking downstairs before we came on here very animatedly because we all believe in this program, and Jessica and Courtney have both been students of mine in the past, and we're like family here, and that's the way we're going to do it. But let's start off with one point we definitely want to make. And so I'll ask you, Michelle, if there is one thing that you would like people to know about the dual language program, because there is so much misunderstanding of this program, what would it be?
I think that I would really, really want to stress that what it means is that children learn two languages to a high academic level. They're not losing one. They're not just learning two to a low level, but they are learning two languages. They're proceeding in their own native language and then learning another one. And then they're also immersed in a culture. And it's not just about language, but they're immersed in another culture that is different than their own.
And advantages of that over traditional school language programs?
There's so many, I could talk for hours. But anyway, they are learning at a younger age. They start out as in kindergarten. So they're in it for, in Kenosha Unified, they're in it for 9 years. And then they enter high school at a fluent or near fluent level in the other language. So that's not at all where you would start your language ability if you started in middle or high school.
And one thing that that I would like to add to that on the basis of having been reminded of it in our conversations downstairs and my observations of it at Bullen, which is a middle school, is a part of the dual language program, and that's something kind of unusual, is that the cohorts, as we call the groups of students, become close friends. They get to know one another, and they have fun learning as a result of that. And the key to any learning is enjoying the process. I guess you can learn things that you aren't enjoying, but you won't hold on to the information very long. And so now I'll ask a second question to the student half of the room here, and that goes along with that, and that is, Courtney, what's your happiest memory of the your experience in the dual language program?
Well, it would be difficult to choose kind of like an isolated incident almost or an isolated experience, because I view it being in the dual language program as a whole, as a very large part of who I am, I feel like because I was introduced to it, and a big part of it isn't just language acquisition, but also understanding different cultures, I feel like I've become much more learned, both culturally as well as academically. And I remember such lovely things like attending quinceañeras and going to other people's houses and celebrating with them and experiencing their family dynamics and their cultural dynamics. And I feel like I walked away with so much more than just knowing Spanish. And I feel like that would be just as effective if it were any other language. You would probably have much a higher grasp, and I felt like I was a part of a family because these classes stay together throughout those years, and it's almost like we're one huge family. I mean, at least I felt like that. Homer, how about you? I really hope so.
Yeah, it was definitely like a second family to me. The program wasn't just taking extra Spanish classes. It was immersing yourself in a different culture, like interacting with people you usually wouldn't interact with. And that, I don't know, just made the learning experience much better for me.
Well, once again, the family environment always made it so much fun that there isn't just one happy moment. Everything was happy and fun. And of course, there was the few bad moments where you're going to have no matter where you go, but you had a family to get through it with.
Yeah, I felt like my dual language family always had my back when we were doing something, and whenever we go together, it seemed like the dual language kids stuck together and took care of each other. And it wasn't even just the students, the parents, they kind of took children under their wing. I would always go to other students' houses all the time, or if I, some reason my mom couldn't pick me up from school or something like that, there were five or six different parents in line that would happily take care of us. And it was more than a class, it was more than a school, it was a community. And I think it was incredibly important as a student and as a young student to have that huge support system and to have this amazing encouragement from so many different levels and so many different people. Definitely.
That's a very good comment. It reminded me, as you were speaking, of what happens at the upperclassmen level in the military academy, what they try and do. When the kids who stay with the military academy over at Indian Trail, by the time they get to be seniors, they're supporting one another. They're a unit. They care about each other. We're all in this together. And that's something I see at Bullen with the dual language students is they're feeling if one of us fails, all of us fails. They're not worried about failing. They were worried about succeeding.
Definitely. We take care of each other, and we want each other to succeed, just like you want to see your sister succeed or your best friend succeed. I want to stress how important it is, not just language, but culturally, because I'm not Hispanic, and a lot of the students there were Hispanic, and I was welcomed with open arms to such a lovely, colorful array of traditions, whether it be family or nationally. And that's something that I always take away, and it's so important to have that, not just as a child, but in the future, not just as an individual, but as a citizen. And I've had experiences outside of it where I use what I have learned culturally to interact with other people. It's amazing what you realize that you can do once you're given such a supporting and nurturing environment. And I feel like I would turn out a lot more different than if I hadn't had this experience and these support systems.
Jessica, when you got to high school and you were no longer in the group that you had been in middle school, did you miss anything?
I missed a lot of it. I had a couple of people that I knew from middle school there, but I wasn't close to them, so I had to start over in a way with a bunch of new people after like 9 years of having the same people in the classes the whole time, every single class. So it was a big thing to make that change, and I missed a lot of it. I missed the sense of community. I missed the being familiar with everything that was going on. And
yeah, I feel like that. I felt that too, definitely. I was borderline frightened when I walked into Indian Trail. I was like, I don't know any of these people. And in a way, you could think that that would be almost negative. It's like, oh, they've been with these people for so long, they shouldn't be pushed into that. But in reality, it wasn't a bad kind of fear. It was just a different situation.
This is Michelle here. As a parent and seeing three kids go through this, and I think that, you know, any of us who's had more than one kid in the program, having the 6-8 grades be dual language, so you're in elementary K-5, but then being able to go to a larger middle school where the program is part of a larger middle school was such an asset, because you got to remain with the core kids, but yet you did get to learn to meet new people. You could meet other people in gym or band or whatever, and it kind of gave you that ability, just as you're an adolescent, to expand and meet other people while still keeping the familiarity and the comfort, right? I mean, that's just what I thought I saw with my kids, and I don't know, you know. But also it was about the language, because then you could use that language even more. You could take that middle school part and expand on it, right? You could now write papers, or you could do some of those incredibly difficult projects that Senor Rocio like to give.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
So, Homer, you're being very quiet here. When you got to high school, did you find that your, just as a way of comparing the two experiences of dual language and traditional language, the people that you were with in Spanish language classes in high school, did you find yourself advanced with regard to them?
When I went to the class and, like, we had our classes, I definitely saw that I was at a much higher level than all the kids around me. And I felt like I didn't need these lower classes because I was already at a, like, much higher level than everyone else. And it, like, really just helped me with my classes. It was just much easier. The, like, program really helped a lot.
Definitely. I felt like there is a huge difference, a very obvious difference, because we don't just learn language classes in the dual language program, but we also learn the core classes in the language. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember mm-hmm. learning about the American Civil War in Spanish, which is a completely different situation than learning about it in English. And just learning Spanish in high school, because, like Homer said about the huge difference in being able to speak in levels, AP Spanish in high school is tiny. I had two other students, and we had to be actually integrated into, I think, a 201 class, and you can imagine the huge gap that needed to be bridged, excuse me, there. It's insane.
Well, what you bring up, Courtney, is I'm just so passionate about dual language. I have all this information that is, like, wanting to be told, you know. But one of the things you said about learning, you're speaking Spanish, but you're learning another topic. You're learning another content. And that's the thing about dual language, is there are non-negotiable parts, and one of them is that half the time has to be in the target language. And then you have an English class, you have Spanish, but you might be learning science in Spanish. So my older daughter did her middle school science in Spanish, Now, they've changed that, and they're just doing social studies in Spanish. But you get an enriched vocabulary that way. If you're taking, you know, math in, because math is taught in Spanish. And that's been one of the controversies with all of the testing. Should we be teaching math in a second language? But the reason it was done way back at the beginning, and I'm old enough and been around long enough with this program, the reason they did it was they thought, well, math is doesn't really have a language
it's
of
its own.
It's exactly. its own thing. So,
and if anything, you could argue, especially in science, if we were to teach Spanish and science in Spanish, excuse me, goodness, is that the language of science is usually Latin, which
right.
every language has derivatives. Well, not every, I should say, but much of our spoken languages are derived from Latin. So really, it doesn't really matter what language you teach it in.
And in dual language, to be considered dual language, there's no translation. There isn't supposed to be translation. You're supposed to be in that class and learning it in that language.
Exactly.
And so that's another thing that like stretches your mind.
The methodology of it is that you get taught the language in context, in all context, not just learning it in a language class, but learning it in a social studies context or learning it in a science context or a cultural context. And that's probably what makes the dual language stand out so much more from just taking a Spanish mm-hmm. class. Mm-hmm. The amount of context that you have within it mm-hmm. provides so much more than just language.
And that reminds me of something, and that is that I had quite a few language courses in college because my major being international history, Russian and German, but I never got to the point where I was thinking in those languages until I started hosting exchange students and living with them in a house, and then I was starting to think in that language. And that's an enormous level jump.
Definitely. I remember me and Jess talk about this all the time where, well, do you want to explain it, Jess, with all the signs that we read?
Well, since we were taught these languages when we were younger, we were able to think in these languages as well. So it wasn't like learning just the language. We learned how to think in that language. And
it came so natural to us. We'd see signs in Spanish, and we would just, without even thinking, realize that we translated it into English. And it would come to a surprise to us when other people would.
And I know my girls have said it a few times, because I'm not bilingual. You know, even though my mom is from Mexico, and I was born and raised here, and I'm not bilingual, so I saw the advantages for my kids. But my girls have said sometimes, like, they would sometimes just all of a sudden speak and start saying a word in Spanish. And they didn't realize that they had done that.
Yeah.
You know, which is a weird thing.
When I was in elementary school, I was at my grandma's house. We were all there, and it was really funny, and all of us laugh about it sometimes, where I couldn't remember the English word for dog, and I could just remember what it was in Spanish. So I'm, like, telling everybody, and Courtney wasn't around, so she couldn't just translate it for me. I'm like, no, you don't get it. It's the perro.
And you were this little girl.
Yeah, one thing that I definitely did notice with, like, the other kids in my upper-level classes was that when they spoke Spanish to each other, it was more of a formal thing. It wasn't really social. Like, being immersed in the Spanish constantly made it easier to speak. I was more comfortable with it. And you could totally tell the difference.
I'm still afraid to speak Spanish now.
Yeah, but you're beyond the point where you're translating things into English and then translating them back into Spanish. I took a bunch of exchange students out at Yerkes Observatory. There was an astronomer from Spain working there a couple of years ago, and he gave a demonstration to that with about 20 of students and their parents there, some of whom spoke Spanish. And he had a phrase that he told one of the persons out of the hearing of somebody else. And he had them tell a second person in Spanish, and then that person was supposed to tell it to a third person at the other end of the room who hadn't heard in English, and then that person was supposed to repeat the information back to them. And he showed us how in the process of translating it to English and then translating it back into Spanish, it had taken on a completely new meaning.
Definitely. Because it's all about context, and you don't get that, like I said before, in just a language class. When you talk to other people in social settings or in a more relaxed setting, you're not thinking of, what's the way to say this properly?
Or
like
the correct
in the subjunctive,
tense of a verb, yeah.
Oh, do I need to use future tense? Is this the right word?
But I have a question, because I know the research shows for dual language that, that kids perform. So native English speakers actually perform better in English. So it isn't just that they learn Spanish, but they learn their own language better. Okay. That's testing and research shows. But do you guys, did you have that experience? Do you feel like this enhanced your English as well?
Oh, definitely. At first, when I was in the middle of the dual language program, this thought occurred to me a lot. I was like, I really hope that doing these two things at the same time doesn't mess up both my Spanish and my English, so I kind of am subpar in both. That would really suck. But I actually found through experience now that it's become a lot easier for me to speak in both languages. I feel like I can articulate myself much easier knowing both languages. And it's really another thing I've noticed, especially recently, is that it really opens up the gates for other languages. Like, I can basically understand some French because, like I said, it's Latin roots. And knowing all of these things already and already experiencing language acquisition has made the process much easier the next time around, definitely.
Mm-hmm. When you went on a trip to Italy a few years ago, were you able to get by in Italy because of the Spanish that you knew?
Definitely. I can understand brokenly kind of Italian because, like, Latin roots, and you can pick apart the words and come to a realization through, like, prefixes and suffixes and the way the word works. I remember one memory where it was, like, we had free time like we usually had, and we were running around, and we found a gelato shop, and I loved gelato when I was there, so I was like, I need to run in there and get some, and everybody, the people behind me were like, oh, I'm not so sure, wouldn't you have to ask in Italian? I'm like, it's fine, don't worry about it, I got this. So I walk up there thinking I'm a hot shot, and I walk up there with my younger self asking if I can have some ice cream, por favore, because I realized, both through listening to other people and realizing the connection between the languages, that the word for please was not that different at all, actually. And I got ice cream for everyone. I didn't pay, obviously. I was not going to pay for them, but I would order for them. And I was the hot shot of the day. Everybody was like, wow, that's amazing. You speak Italian? I'm like, no, I speak Spanish. And they're like, how does that work? And I'm like, well, words are similar.
And then that you had the courage to say it,
Mm-hmm.
That you had the courage to do it.
I felt comfortable in different cultural settings. That's another mm-hmm. thing. I felt the general homesickness that you usually do, but I didn't experience any kind of culture shock or anything of the similarities. I didn't think, oh, this is really different, I'm scared. It was like, oh, this is really different, I'm really excited to learn more about this. Because mm-hmm. I remember how many great experiences I have sharing culture back when I was learning Spanish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In a more tangible, materialistic way, how has this helped you in college? Has it helped you with, say, with regard to your ability to get certain classes, the classes that you might not need to take, any advantages in that?
Oh, well, when I took the language test for
yes.
testing in, I went straight up to the, second intermediate class. I mean, the fruits that you get from this are very obvious, and I'm very aware that I will have many other job opportunities, and the career choice I have will be greatly more beneficial to me knowing that I am bilingual.
And to me, that whole issue of being bilingual, I've had so many people ask me in the 18 years that this program has existed and my kids started, why in the world would we want to, our goal should be teaching English to anybody who doesn't know English. And I was like, well, but if we can teach them a higher level of English and a higher level of their own language, doesn't that make them better academically all the way around by the end of, you know, whatever, 6th grade, 8th grade, 10th grade, whatever? And that's what research shows, is that if you have the native speakers of the other language, the non-English language, they do better in English in a dual language program because they're understanding more and they're learning more in their own language. It's like a going up different steps. So if you just put somebody in a program where their own native language isn't reinforced, it's like they kind of have to relearn a little bit, you know, as opposed to building on what they already know.
Yeah, that was definitely my case. When I took my college entry tests for Spanish and English, it was really easy. I actually tested out of English, so that proves that it doesn't, like, hinder your learning in English at all. And then I got, one of the highest, levels of Spanish you could get. So that dual language thing definitely helped me in both.
We're down to about 3-4 minutes. The thing that often occurs to me when we're talking about a dual language is why isn't this program larger? Because it is such a tremendous opportunity for people. Could you speak to that, Michelle?
I guess my experience as a parent and an advocate for dual language and over the, since 1998 in Kenosha Unified, is that There were always more families who wanted to sign their children up for the program than there were spots, that there's never really been any one person or department who was in charge. And, you know, that happens in organizations. But there's always been a very strong need for a coordinator, a person who is knowledgeable. And the principals have done all they could have done, but they obviously principals have other issues than just being an advocate for a program. The stability of the program has been greatly dependent on our teachers, and our teachers have been absolutely phenomenal. But families don't even know it exists anymore. So many other programs are promoted, and dual language is there, and it's not even really promoted. And so I just feel like that's what we really need. We need to have people who are knowledgeable, who can get out there and advocate and say what a great thing this is for almost every kid. You know, there's no reason why that wouldn't be the case.
I'm thinking of the building administrators that I know, and I can't think of perhaps one who comes from a language background.
Well, I think there is a change in our community, and Hispanics are 25% of the Kenosha Unified student population right now, and we don't see that reflected in a lot of staff, but we definitely see that family-wise, so we need to get some more information out there to let teachers and staff know that this is really important.
We have a new position at Kenosha Unified, World Language Coordinator and Language Program Coordinator, and a new person in that program. I'm hopeful that that's going to be positive. Are you as well?
I am as well. I think that this new, relatively new employee knows a lot about dual language instruction as well as just general language acquisition.
It's dual language is something that you can't just in a short period of time expand dramatically. It's going to have to be built, but I think we're all agreed that it's worth working towards. And hopefully we've been able to get some of that message out now with this program today. With that, I think we'll wrap things up because we have to leave a little early today. The reason being that part of our time is being preempted by the Metropolitan Opera. So I'd like to thank you all. If you have want to say goodbye or have a last comment, this is the time to do it. Otherwise, we'll end it for today.
Adios.
Bye. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org. WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine.
We're live at the Metropolitan Opera House in New York City. I'm Mary Jo Heath in for Margaret Chuntwaite. Today's Saturday matinee is one of Giuseppe Verdi's crowning glories, Don Carlo, his epic drama about the conflicts between passion, idealism, and power. Maestro Yannick Nezet-Séguin conducts this eloquent score. Singing the title role today is tenor Ricardo Tamura, stepping in for Younghoon Lee, who is ill. The acclaimed cast also features Barbara Fritoli, Ekaterina Gubanova, Dmitry Havorostovsky, Ferruccio Furlanetto, and James Morris. During the intermissions, we'll take you backstage for some interviews, and we'll have a star-studded singers' roundtable. Stay with us.
This performance is being broadcast live over the Toll Brothers Metropolitan Opera International Radio Network, sponsored by Toll Brothers, America's luxury home builder, with generous long-term support from the Annenberg Foundation, the Neubauer Family Foundation, the Vincent A. Stabile Endowment for Broadcast Media, and through contributions from listeners worldwide.
Hi, Mary Jo Heath in for Margaret Chuntwaite, and with me is our commentator, Ira Siff. Ira, Don Carlo is rich with the themes that fascinated Verdi. He was repeatedly drawn to stories about the clash between private desire and public duty, but here he depicts so many kinds of desires and duties and with such nuance.
Well, the opera is set against the monumental backdrop of Spain during the Inquisition and against all the political, religious, and personal intrigue. Verdi managed to draw such intimate, profoundly vivid character portraits.
And Maestro Nezet-Séguin and our ensemble cast have been winning raves in ovations. Now, as you just heard, Ricardo Tamura is singing the role of Don Carlo today. He was already scheduled to sing the performance on Wednesday, but now he gets a network broadcast debut. We're going to hear the first two acts of the opera with no intermission. Here's what happens in Act One. Spain and France have negotiated peace by arranging for the Spanish Prince Don Carlo to marry the French Princess Elizabeth, or Elisabetta. Carlo has secretly come to France to get a glimpse of her. They meet and fall instantly in love, only to be devastated by the decree that the arrangements have changed. Carlo's father, King Philip, a widower, will wed Elizabeth instead of Carlo. By the second act, which takes place in Spain, Elizabeth and Philip are married. Carlo is urged by his friend Rodrigo, the Marquis of Poza, to recover from his heartbreak by taking up a worthy cause, saving the people of Flanders, who are suffering under Spanish oppression. In the next scene, ladies of the court are entertained by a song from the Princess Eboli. Then Carlo comes to meet Elizabeth in private. In spite of their feelings for each other, she refuses to dishonor Philip, and Carlo runs off in despair. When the king arrives and finds her alone, he banishes the lady-in-waiting who should have been attending her. He then confides in Rodrigo, whom he trusts. Philip suspects his son and wife are in love, and he asks Rodrigo to keep an eye on them. Rodrigo tries to plead for the Flemish cause, but Philip warns him to beware of the Inquisition. And that's how the second act ends. So, Ira, let's go back to the beginning, the only happy time in the opera.
Right. Well, in Carlo's opening aria, he describes having been dazzled by Elizabeth's smile. He's a young man in love with love, and we hear this in his rapturous vocal line.
Elizabeth doesn't know who he is at first, and when she finds out, she's practically giddy with joy. She was prepared to marry for duty, and now she's in love.
Oh, their duet is stunning. With a rising figure that evokes their excitement and passion, it makes their agony later all the more stark. And in the finale of the act, we hear their minor key line almost drowned out by the major key jubilation of the crowd.
Act Two opens in a dark and somber mood. In his heartache over Elizabeth, Carlo has come to the tomb of his grandfather to pray. It's Rodrigo who lifts his spirits by giving him a higher purpose. And Ira, this duet is just simply glorious.
Yes, the unforgettable main melody will become a friendship theme for the two men throughout the opera. They pray for God to inspire them, and they swear eternal friendship.
The next scene introduces us to the character of Eboli. At first, she's playful. Her veil song, as it's known, tells the story of a Moorish king and his wife.
And it gives the mezzo a chance to toss us some florid Spanish-style music.
Eboli's ears perk up when Rodrigo mentions Carlo because she's interested in the prince herself. Now, the duet between Carlo and Elizabeth is so painful.
Yes, Carlo can't help but express his feelings while Elizabeth tries to keep a lid on hers and be strong for both of them. But when he persists, she makes him face reality by putting it in the harshest terms. Go kill your father and then lead your mother to the altar.
And there's no way Carlo can respond to that. We'll hear, in order of vocal appearance, Ricardo Tamura making his network broadcast debut as Don Carlo, replacing Yong-Hoon Lee, who is ill. Amanda Woodbury in her network broadcast debut as Tobalda the Page, and Barbara Fritoli as Elizabeth. Eduardo Valdez is the Count of Lerma, Robert Pomakoff the Monk, Dmitry Hvodostovsky is Rodrigo the Marquis of Poza, Ekaterina Gubanova is Princess Eboli, and Ferruccio Furlanetto is King Philip II. Our concertmaster today is Laura Hamilton, and Yannick Nezet-Séguin conducts the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra and chorus. Now, adding to Elizabeth's suffering is Philip's public insult, coldly sending her away, or sending away her lady-in-waiting, who's her only friend there at court.
We really sense her aloneness and her longing for her homeland in that aria she sings.
Here's Maestro Yannick Nezet-Séguin. Let's hear Acts 1 and 2 of Verdi's Don Carlo.
scotace. Non più dei cacciatori che già noi clamor. Cade il dì, tace ognun, e la stella primiera scintilla nel lontano spazio azzurrin, come del regio stel rinvenire il cammin. Questa selve tanto nera, qual voce risuonò nell'oscura foresta?
Alà, venite vostri voli a me, a me!
Oh, figlio gentile, per me, per me, s'avanza!
Non più la via per ritornare, è più braccio forte e nuova via. La notte buia, il cielo vi fa tremare, andiamo ancora.
Io sono uno stranier, uno spagnol.
E voi mi farete compagna?
Il signore di Lerma, ambasciatore di Spagna.
Sì, nobil donna, e scudo a voi sarò.
Qual piacere